Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumhya ekta The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. Do you follow any influencers on social media? I do, from fitness trainers and stylists to cat owners and cooks with delicious recipes. And I always want to know what other people think about influencers, who they follow and why, and what trends are popular in different countries.
असली और नकली कौन है यहाँ पे पूरे दुनिया को पता है
दो चार बुरे लोगों की बुराई करने से ब्राह्मण बुरे नहीं हो जाएंगे
These clips come from the social media accounts of two influencers who have become quite popular in India. They are two young women who post content about a quite controversial topic, their caste identity. Divya Arya, our correspondent from Delhi, has been looking into this. When I spoke to her, she began by explaining how the caste system works.
It's pretty deeply ingrained in Hinduism, and some estimates suggest that it goes back 3,000 years. And what it does is it segregates everybody who is Hindu on the basis of their caste. And they're different castes, they have different names. Brahmins, broadly, form the top of it. Traditionally, they've been priests, they're the most educated, most privileged, and the Dalits come at the bottom of it, and traditionally, they've done the most what may be called menial jobs or low-paying jobs and have been at the end of a lot of discriminatory practices.
And how does that play out in the society? Do you see, like, for instance, people from the higher caste, more financially well-off, higher also social and economic class? How does it translate into the society?
Absolutely. All of those things. They have better access to resources. They would probably be living in areas with more money, more access to education, jobs, and they will have a higher status in society. Many would say that it is not so prevalent now, but still prevalent in some smaller towns and villages where the Dalits would be considered untouchables or they would not be allowed to use the same utensils if they were to go into the house of somebody of the so-called upper caste. Those segregations are still pretty prevalent, but yes, there's a huge pushback because there is a recognition both from government, society and the law that now bars discrimination, makes it illegal, makes it criminal, punishable. So there is a recognition that discrimination on the basis of caste is wrong, but it's not by any stretch of imagination erased from Indian society.
So it also plays out in politics. So how is modern India really handling it?
Well, the law helps to some extent. It becomes a deterrent. If anybody from the so-called lower caste goes and complains in a police station, they are bound to register a complaint, investigate, and then the justice system is supposed to hand out justice. But we must remember that people who are in positions of power, whether in politics, where they treat people from different caste groups as you know, groups of people that can be attracted for their vote on the basis of caste identity, and therefore have an interest in continuing these caste-based identities, you know, and the segregations that they form. But the judiciary, the police, people who offer jobs, whether in corporate or in government sector, they all are part of the same society which has grown up with this segregation. So whilst there is an recognition and an awareness that caste-based segregation is wrong, it plays out in things like marriage, Farhanak. So marriage amongst different castes is still looked down upon. In fact, parents go to the extent of killing their own son or daughter if he or she steps out of the caste and community and chooses somebody from the other caste. So there's a pushback.
Wow.
From both ends, you know, those wanting to not be restricted in the caste boundaries and those wanting to still push them and still keep them going.
But just to understand, to get my head around it, if you're from a lower caste, let's say a Dalit, would you be discriminated against if you wanted to go to school or to university or get hired somewhere?
You would. It would be different in different parts of the country or, you know, in different strata of society with different levels of awareness. But yes, we still hear of children, you know, in schools, and Indian school system offers what is called a free midday meal. But there'd be discrimination. The Dalit students would be made to sit in a different queue or a different space, and the other students would be made to sit in a different space. Now, not all schools are practicing it, but a substantial number is, and that is why it continues to remain a problem.
Wow. So how do you tell who is from what caste?
Just by their name. So my name is Divya Arya. So my second name or my family name, that is what identifies what caste I am from. You could be caste blind. You could grow up in a big metropolis, have very progressive family, and never talk about caste. And you can also afford to be caste blind if you're from a so-called upper caste, because you don't see any of the discriminations. And so you could be totally unaware of your caste and of other people's castes. But, you know, if you are in the middle or if you're at the lower end, there's just no way of escaping the reality of caste and what it limits in your life and what it just makes it hard to achieve. In fact, Farhanak, representation of Dalits in newsrooms, in media organizations, is abysmal.
So you don't see that many Dalits in media?
Not at all. And there's an argument that limits the representation of their issues or their community's issues. And there's also an interesting argument where Dalit journalists say that when we are given space in newsrooms, we are expected to only report on Dalit issues. So, you know, we're not considered as individuals worthy of reporting on anything else.
So let's talk about the rise of the influencers, these caste influencers. When you first saw these Brahmin influencers, what was your response?
So it wasn't a simple caste story that I was witnessing, because these were young women from small town India. You don't generally see them talking about politics, leave alone making videos where they're identifiable by their face. So what they're saying is clearly their thought. You know, they're not miming any pictures or cartoons. They're not anonymous. They're not on Twitter writing all kinds of tweets without really anybody knowing who they are. These are women. They're making their own videos. They are giving political views, all of which is not considered usual for women from small town India. They are supposed to just, you know, keep to softer, if I may call them softer, issues in air quotes. So it could be about cinema or culture or diet, but not on politics. And caste is as political as it gets, because it is about rights. It's about equality. So that was interesting. So there's almost a feminist assertion there. But then at the same time, what they are doing is kind of problematic. And they are justifying it by saying, oh, we are making these videos about pride in our own caste. So what's wrong in that? But you spend some time, scroll down their feed, watch like a good number of videos. And I went across 100 accounts in total. And then you find that this pride is actually also diminishing the other caste. So it's also saying this is a Dalit person is less, or affirmative policies brought in by the government to help Dalits and other people from the so-called lower caste climb up the ladder or access education, employment and other opportunities are actually wrong, because they're taking away from those of the upper caste by giving undue advantage to those of the lower caste. So it was moving away from pride into a space which was very uncomfortable.
So reinforcing that discriminatory belief, basically.
Exactly.
You actually met one of these women. She's a Brahmin influencer.
Hindu mera dharm aur Brahmin meri jati hai. Ye sunke jinki jal rahi hai, wo doglon ki chhati hai.
Why does she want to do this? What does she tell you? What is she trying to communicate?
So it was interesting. I went to the small town and she met me on the terrace of her family temple. And she spoke a lot about the values that the family has. She comes from a family of priests. Her brother is training to be a priest. And she said that it would be against the values of her family if she made song and dance videos. So this is her way of carrying forward the Brahmin values, which she feels should be propagated more because the upper castes don't come together the way the lower castes come together demanding their rights. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting that she acknowledges her privilege of being from the so-called upper caste. And at the same time, she is asserting that, oh, we are threatened by those of the lower castes. So it's an interesting dichotomy that, you know, she lives in. And then her videos will, you know, talk about all the things that they have been denied. Some of what she talks about would be called misinformation by others. For example, she'd say that people from the so-called upper castes are considered to be paupers. You know, they don't have money and they are priests, but they go with a begging bowl in front of temples. Now, some people would say that's a complete untruth because priests have a lot of sway. Their word carries a lot of weight and they're actually a privileged part of the society.
Mm. And there are also influencers from the so-called lower caste. And you spoke to one woman from the Dalit caste. I actually checked her Instagram account. Her Instagram name is Bimachi Sherni, if I'm pronouncing it. So tell us about her name and what she told you.
So the name Bimachi Sherni translates from Marathi to Bhimrao Ambedkar's lioness. And Bhimrao Ambedkar is an icon in the Dalit community. He's a Dalit leader and credited to be the father of India's constitution, which was written when India gained independence in 1947. So despite coming from a lower caste, being a Dalit, he rose up the ranks in politics and he was able to be a very influential figure. At the time the constitution was written, he talked about equality, talked about equal rights. So she says that she started this account and making these videos to propagate his ideas. And why she decided to propagate his ideas is because she saw the Brahmin influencers. She came across those videos and she thought that she had to counter those videos by propagating his ideas.
Mm. And what does she actually talk about on her page? I was like looking at her videos and some of them look very cheerful and joyful, but I don't understand what she's talking about.
Yeah, she dresses up. She, you know, would wear a particular type of nose ring, which is very typical of Marathi women. Mm-hmm. And she'd wear a turban. Again, she told me she likes to be angry in her videos or very energetic, like you
expressive.
Said. Some of very expressive. Yeah. Her eyes, you know, she'd put some coal on her eyes.
इतर लोकांमध्ये आणि आमच्यामध्ये विचार करण्याचा दृष्टिकोन काय वेगळा आहे हे मी तुम्हाला सांगते. इतर लोक आहेत ना, प्रत्येक महापुरुषाने फक्त आणि फक्त त्याच्या जातीच्या नजरेने बघतात. त्यांनी कोणत्या जातीसाठी काय केलं, त्यांनी कोणत्या जातीसाठी केवढं केलं, आमच्या जातीसाठी केवढं केलं, तुमच्या जातीसाठी केवढं केलं. म्हणून
शी सेज दॅट पीपल फ्रॉम द लोअर कास्ट फील दॅट their expression has been curtailed. So in all her messaging, most of it would be, say, support for the affirmative policy of the government, which guarantees a certain number of seats in educational institutions for Dalits, or employment guarantees like a certain concession when you access jobs in the government sector. So it would be in support of that. Or it would be to counter something that a Brahmin account would have specifically said about Dalits being less in some way. Or it would be about the ideal Dalit man, which is a lot of what the other influencer also does, the ideal Brahmin man. So there is a lot of propagation of, you know, what is the best in our community. And both of them caricature that a lot. And both of them propagate marriages or relationships within their castes. So in a way, even though Dr. Bhimrao Ambedkar talked about inter-caste marriages and relationships as one of the most effective ways of mingling of castes and reducing discrimination and making a better understanding of each other's caste and communities. This trend is actually negating that idea because it is propagating pride and a very inward-looking view of their own castes.
I suppose, I was thinking if you were from a so-called lower caste, you would want to get married into the higher caste. Like that would be like an upward social mobility. But it seems like that's not the case.
Well, not at all. The status of a woman in an Indian marriage has traditionally been one of a secondary nature, and I guess probably worldwide, given the lack of equality amongst men and women, but especially so in South Asian communities. So given that, if you come with a caste disadvantage, unless it's a love marriage, in which also you would encounter a lot of hostility from the family, it is going to be really hard because you will come with a double disadvantage. A family of an upper caste would not want to marry their son, who in any case is somebody that holds more power than a daughter. So they would not want to short sell their son, but they would want a girl from an upper caste family. And most marriages in India, more than 95% from the last survey I read, are still arranged by parents and communities or families. So love marriage are an anomaly still. And love marriages across caste are a big fight with the parents. Mm-hmm. And some may even lead to violent ends, but some do get acceptance. And that's what we're clinging to, I guess, in terms of change and in terms of more acceptance and intermingling.
And Divya, as you mentioned, this trend really doesn't help with the whole idea of intermingling, and it can be quite othering. But when you look at these posts, is any of the content that is produced dangerous in your opinion?
Well, it is, I believe, because it may not target individuals, so it will not name anybody, but it will sort of add fuel to fire in terms of holding negative opinions about the other community. In fact, some of the videos made by upper caste influencers very casually would, have gunshots in the background or hold a rifle even the influencer I met in one of her videos, she holds a rifle in her hands and says, "We Brahmins, we are the best." And then you hear a gunshot in the background. So she's not actually firing in the air, but just the whole demeanor is very aggressive. And she's not saying she's going to go and shoot somebody from the lower caste tomorrow. But in a way, she's almost justifying a violent way of putting somebody down from that community if the need be. And in fact, when we looked at these accounts and we flagged some of those posts to Meta, they did take some of those posts down because they did find them offensive. But they haven't done anything at a large scale looking at such influencers, because I feel that it's a very, very new phenomena. And it's only now that it's been flagged to them and they might be more mindful of it and then maybe, set it up in their community guidelines more clearly.
And Divya, are most of these influencers women?
Well, they're all kinds of influencers on the internet. I won't say they're only women, but women doing this is definitely something that is new because women do not talk about politics. They don't get this kind of space. And both these women, in fact, the one common factor with both of them was that they were very careful and they felt that, harm could come their way by doing this. The upper caste influencer told me that she gets a lot of invitations to go into actual physical programs to go and talk about all her ideas, but her family doesn't allow it, though her family allows her brother to go everywhere. And even with the Dalit influencer, she initially hid that she was making such videos from her family, and her family were not on Instagram. They did not know she was doing this till somebody showed them a video. She wasn't stopped after that. They felt a lot of pride once they saw the kind of work she was doing, because they felt it was taking the cause of their community forward. But she also says that she gets a lot of vitriol on her videos, and she feels that it could harm her someday, but that doesn't stop her.
But why did they ever tell you why, as women, they wanted to do this despite all of the backlash and the limitations?
well, they've got a platform now. And it's not easy to get a platform if you live in a small town in India to put your beliefs out and then also be recognized from that, because they get a lot of support from their communities. And it has made them an influencer. And they take pride in the fact that it's not something light that they're doing, but something of gravitas, something that makes them almost a mini leader in their community. And I think, Farhanak, we also need to remember that in most communities, all the pressure of upholding your religion, your caste, your social identity is unfairly put on women.
Yes.
So in a way, when they get to say something about it, it's a big deal. And also they engage more with it because it is something that they are being made to do, whether it is covering their head or not stepping into kitchens if they're menstruating. It can be really anything on the spectrum. And I feel that then getting that control to talk about these things is the feminist aspect, that kind of assertion in this story.
Yeah, having some sort of agency.
Absolutely. Agency is the word.
Thank you to our correspondent from Delhi, Divya Arya. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
What is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Farhanak Amidi. Now, the Olympics might be over, but the Olympic spirit is still very much alive in Paris. And while we wait for the start of the Paralympics, I want to take you to a tiny corner of the French capital, away from the big crowds, where some people have found their own way of embracing the excitement of the games. This is a group of elderly women sitting outside a retirement home in Paris, casually chatting to a top athlete. My colleague Laura Garcia from BBC Mundo stumbled upon this scene while she was reporting on the Olympics.
I came across this story completely by chance, because I met an athlete that I wanted to interview on the secondary exit to the Olympic Village. So this is not the big one where everyone goes and where all the athletes go to. This is the littler one on the side. And we were done, we did the interview, and as my cameraman Merrick and I were walking to the tube station, we just realized there's a retirement home literally about 10 meters away from the entry point to the Olympic Village. And that these ladies were there, sat in the shade, with a table with what looked like photographs and like prints of the Olympic rings. And they were shouting out at the athletes as they walked past. And we realized that this was an organized thing. These women were sat there on purpose collecting autographs and pins. All of the athletes get given pins by the National Olympic Committee from their countries. And so these women had a really impressive collection of international pins. Then we looked around a little bit more and realized their entire retirement home, the front of it, was decorated with flags. They'd written welcome messages in French, in Spanish, in Portuguese, saying like, welcome athletes, we're very happy to have you in Paris, come and say hi. And we just had to stop and ask questions and see what they were doing, and obviously also ask if we could film with them, because it's a beautiful story that kind of captures the Olympic spirit.
Every sport, I watched every sport, athleticism, gymnastics.
The director of this retirement home is a lady called Fatima Sarou, and she loves the Olympics. She absolutely adores it. And she knew she wanted to do something for the residents of the retirement home around the Olympics. They hadn't realized how close they would be to the entry and exit point to the Olympic Village, but they thought it'd be a nice opportunity to like do some activities, maybe get them outside, watching a bunch of sport and get into the spirit. When they saw, because you can, if you're there for more than 5 minutes, it's almost like marathon waves of people going in and out because it's on the way to one of the training grounds. So there's just endless supply of these incredible athletes from all countries walking by this retirement home. And Fatima realized very quickly that if she stood by the gate, opened the gate, she could call the athletes in so they could spend some time with her residents.
Hello, sorry, Haifa. Hello. Hello. We have ours for the best.
And a bunch of the residents of the retirement home, maybe their families don't get to visit as often as they'd like, or they have been there for a really long time, and getting that interaction with people who are younger from different countries for all sorts of disciplines, trying to get a conversation going. And then the women did the rest, because the women were also shouting, flirting with the athletes when they came in, taking pictures. It was just lovely to spend some time with them.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Allez, passez une bonne journée. Et vous êtes très élégante, mesdames.
Most of the athletes were very happy to stop for a sec. The only couple times that I saw some of them say that no thank you, we can't, but we'll come back, is when they were on their way to training and their coaches were with them. Because you can see, they look back at the coach and they go like, may I? And the coach is like, no, you've got to train. But we also saw, because we spent probably about an hour and a half, 2 hours with them, we saw people come back. I don't remember the name of this athlete, but there was a French athlete who came in and he spent like a good 10 minutes with these women. And he was saying that he'd recently lost his granny and that just spending some time with people who were the same age as his grandmother just made him feel really nice. In that same, again, Olympic spirit of how sport crosses boundaries and languages and ages. And he got a bit teary and just spent a really nice time, got some hugs, took some pictures with the old ladies, and then went on to keep competing.
We want to create the, I don't know, sounds le partage. It means to give to the athletes and to receive from the athletes. Everybody is happy. It's nice to meet each other. I see everybody is happy to be here to compete for the Olympic Games.
I think this story is going to stick with me for a really long time. First, we stumble upon it, which is how you come across some of the best stories. Second, because it was just a joy to be there with them. We got corralled into shouting out at athletes as well. So I was like shouting to the Colombians so they could come in and sign stuff. Marek, who's the cameraman that I went with, is from Poland. So he was trying a bit of Polish. It just became this like beautiful little moment. And the third one is because I don't have any grandparents anymore as well. And I was quite close to my granny. And spending time with these women, again, also reminded me of her and this kind of indomitable spirit that she had and that these women also had of just like keep going. And I am so envious of their pin collection. I might, it's my last day in Paris. I might go back and see if I can trade a pin or two with them.
Lauro Garcia, who's been covering the Olympics for BBC Mundo. If you want to let us know what you think of the show or you have a burning question for one of our amazing language service correspondents, why don't you drop us a line? Our email is thefifthfloor@bbc.co.uk. That is thefifthfloor, all one word, at bbc.co.uk. I'm Farnak Hamidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Alice Joya and Caroline Ferguson. The studio manager was Bob Nettles. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.